You're listening to Music Weekly Extra from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and this is an interview with the Pet Shop Boys, Neil Tennant and Chris Lowe, just ahead of the release of their 10th album, Yes. Gents.
Oh, that makes a change from boys.
Yeah?
We often get called the boys. Gents is...
I think that's kind of deference to that kind of smash hitsy kind of terminology, which I too share. But I thought I'd say gents with a degree of respect. And what have you learnt from 25 years in the pop game?
Silence fell at that point. Lots about music, about making music, about recording songs, about writing, structuring songs. We are people who follow our own instincts and even our own whims, for better or for worse. And we've not learned not to do that.
Uh-huh.
In a sense, it doesn't matter what we've learned in the last 25 years. We are the Pet Shop Boys, and that's what we do. And we make up our rules as we go along. We, of course, deal with whatever rules are afflicting the music business at any given time. But we sort of try to do things our own way. And we did that at the start. We still do it now. And we haven't unlearned that. I think when people are in the music business a long time, they unlearn things. And so they maybe become less interesting as time goes on, because being in the music industry can do that to people if they're not strong artists.
So you mean they kind of, people get a received idea of what they should be doing?
Yes. We haven't, in the main, we haven't done that.
Was that something that, you say you were like that from the start, was that something you were very conscious of from the start? Or did it become clear to you that it was something you'd have to be like?
Well, I've mentioned many times before, but when we were on Top of the Pops in the beginning of 1986 and West End Girls is number one, as the camera panned over towards me, Chris, standing behind me at the keyboard, hissed, "Don't look triumphant." And that kind of sums it all up, really. Many people would have looked like, "Hey, we're number one." We're Top of the Pops. And we tried to do it with a certain insouciance, whatever the word is. We had that right from the beginning. And also, our idea at the beginning was that we were our own world, we were our own thing, and we could invite people into it, like Liza Minnelli or Electronic, and we could enter their world, you know. But we weren't just going to become music business sort of hacks. And I hope that we have avoided becoming that.
And has the way of making music changed for you over that time? Is it a more laborious process? Is it easier? Is it?
The process of writing the songs is pretty much the same. In many ways, it's easier because the technology is far more instant, and you know, you can get an idea down really quickly. It's not, you don't have that frustrating thing where it doesn't work and doesn't sync up. You know, you can actually do it all in the one laptop, almost anywhere. You know, so making the records. You know, we always work with a producer as well, and you work differently with different producers. Quite often, though, a lot of it's based on the demos that we've made to begin with. So really, I don't think the way we work has changed that much, because there were just two of us and we sort of kind of do it all ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. There's not a band situation, and, you know, you haven't got the bass player and the drummer, you know, hanging around bored and stuff like that. So we're both very hands-on in the whole process.
With the advent of the technology you're talking about, that it's something you find yourself embracing? And
well, actually, I don't think we would have even existed before the technology made it possible for the Pet Shop Boys to exist, because we would never have, you know, recruited other members to be in the band. It's always a duo. It was always us doing everything. We are a group that exists because of the technology, because of drum machines and emulators and things like that.
As that technology, the sequential technology, has got more complicated, do you find yourself ever in a position of looking at yourself and thinking, hang on, we're traditionalists in a technological sense?
Well, we are quite traditional, really, in terms of the songs that we write. They quite often are a very standard pop format in terms of the structure. And we've always just used whatever is around that we can realise those songs to the best of their ability and as easily as possible. When the sampler came along, which was when we were starting, you know, you could play orchestras and choirs and all, you know, all these kind of things that would have been very difficult to do beforehand. And so we've always embraced the newest forms of making music, just simply because, well, first, it's exciting, and whenever you get something new, it gives you a new impetus. you know, it's always exciting when you get a new keyboard, for instance. You think, oh, great, got a new keyboard. New sounds give you new ideas. And, you know, so using the technology and the fact that technology is always changing keeps an interest in the whole songwriting process.
How would you describe Yes musically?
We think it's a bit like a greatest hits record because it has the first half that we deliberately structured it, so it's one song after another. Johnny Marr, who plays in it, we sent him the finished copy, and he said, it's great, the songs just keep on coming. And that's what it's like. It's an And the Beat Goes On concept, and a song starts, but it's different, maybe a different style from the last one. But it's pretty up, you know. It's got a sort of throbbing beat or 60s beat, you know, or a dance beat or something. That's what we wanted to have, is to have very, very, very strong melodic songs with strong ideas, one after the other. And we wanted it as Xenomaniacs, we wanted it to be electro-pop all the way through. So there's a linking sound. When you work with several producers, that can work really well because you can work in different styles and achieve them, you know, perfectly. But maybe the album doesn't hang together. Like Bedtime Stories by Madonna, which I think is an underrated album, doesn't really hang together in that way because it's all different producers. And this album really, really hangs together. In fact, on the second half of the album, if it was a vinyl album, it would be a real side one, side two album. Side two would be a totally different record. It would start with the song Building a Wall, which is immediately an unusual song. It's got Chris and I talking on it, or shouting on it, really, in fact. And on side two, if we call it that, you get the slightly more experimental side. On the song Legacy, we were trying deliberately in the studio to write a different kind of melody that's not really a pop melody, mm-hmm. that uses unusual intervals. And it was actually quite difficult to sing. I couldn't get my head around the melody. Although it probably sounds really easy now, but in fact, the melody is really quite unusual. That car from Wales, boy, has been on the phone. He wants to upgrade the mobile you own. Have you realized your computer's a spy? Give him a ring, he'll explain why.
I'd like to ask you about Legacy again in a moment, actually. But you mentioned Xenomania. The process of working with them, I've heard accounts that it's almost like going to pop school. They have a very formal way of working. Is that the case?
Formal is not quite the right word because it can seem positively chaotic, the whole thing, actually. In this house, all the rooms upstairs have a different studio setup. In the attic, there's two young Australian guys playing drums and guitars and keyboards. In one room, there's an SSL desk with someone mixing with lots of programming. In another room, there's a French guy comes in at 3 days every fortnight who works with Daft Punk sometimes as well. It's called Fred Falker. Actually, I noticed he's DJing in London.
Yeah, doing a lot of remixes as well.
Yeah. There's a guy who's an official member of Xenomania who used to work with the KLF in the early 90s. There's another guy who records the vocals mainly, Matt, who's a very good engineer. So you've got a room, and then Dad says you've got Brian sitting on his sofa, and people keep coming in and just handing him memory sticks with a new bit of a song on, with a plate thing over, and he listens to it and puts it and kind of grades it, so if he likes it or not. It's a most unusual way of working.
So do you take a turn from one bedroom to the next and go?
Absolutely, around? Yeah. Sometimes we might be in different bedrooms. I might be doing vocals with Matt in one room, the other end of the corridor, Chris is with Tim working on programming for something.
And is it true that if you haven't met, you haven't kept up to the schedule, then someone will come in and check on you?
No, it's not true.
That story.
Every now and then, there's a meeting downstairs. They go through all the different projects, you know. Like when we were there, it was Girls Aloud's album was being finished. Actually, really, when we started, that was the priority because that was coming out this year, then. And it was coming out in September, October or something. And we weren't coming out until 2009. And they've got their own band they're developing. There's someone else's album. Alicia's album is coming out. And it was exciting because while we were there, The Promise suddenly was on the radio. Alicia's single, The Boy Does Nothing, was all over the radio.
Yeah. Oh, and they were having a big hit at the time with Gabriella Chilmi as well.
Sweet About Me. So Brian would be looking at the radio charts and things.
Did he look triumphant?
He likes hits.
He looks quietly satisfied. Yeah. He doesn't really do triumphant.
We spoke to Franz Ferdinand a wee while ago, who had been planning to work with Xenomania, and then apparently didn't do it because Xenomania wanted to write the songs. Now, you always write your songs, but on this album, you co-wrote three. Was that a hard compromise to come to?
No.
No, we looked forward to it. You know, it's quite interesting seeing how other people write songs, and no, we're really up for that. You know, and also, it's not something we've done very often. We've only ever co-written with Robbie Williams and Ali Willis, who we wrote What Have I Done to Deserve This with. So, you know, it's quite an interesting challenge.
And really. Miracles we did.
Oh, yes, and Miracles. But we don't make it often do it. And it was fascinating, really. I mean, because they write songs in such a different way than we do. And, you know, we've taken an awful lot away from it.
What like?
When we've written a song, that's kind of it. But they will keep on working it, try more melodies and try more lyrical ideas and try switching them around the song, and they'll just keep on pushing and pushing and pushing until they've tried everything that can go there. And so I think that's the main thing we've taken away from.
Do you ever worry that you might lose the original sense of what the song was, though? Or would it?
With our songs, they're not written like that. So we probably, if we think the original sense of the song is going, we would, which we didn't feel, but we would say something about it. With their songs, the song isn't really totally evident till the record is 70% made. Because what you do is you sing. There are songs that we wrote, or bits of songs we wrote. I can wake up in the morning and find myself singing something and think, what's that? And then think, oh, it's the next big thing. This song we wrote was Xenomania that's never been recorded. Or it's lurking around on various memory sticks down in Kent. And I'm thinking, I quite like that song. And so you wouldn't know. And for instance, there's a track in the album called More Than a Dream. It was originally a song called Where the Wild Things Are. And it had a spoken intro that was recorded. It had a whole chorus that was based on the dee 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 dee. Tell me where the wild things are, because I don't want to know your name. The dee dee, you know, that kind of thing. That melody's still in the record, but that song, but Miranda Cooper and I, who are writing the words, that thought that was crap, basically, because it was. It was a bit corny. Chris wrote this middle bit, dee, 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 and I love this bit. It sounded really Los Angeles to me, just you and me, faster than a pale moonlight. And that's still in the song. But this song we were going to scrap, and Chris wrote a bit of a melody over a chord change. And I was listening to it over the summer when we had a break. And I said, this bit is really good. Dee, 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 dee. And so I said, can we try and make that? We were on the verge of scrapping it. Can we make that into the verse? And suddenly you've got this incredible change from the very bright Xenomania melody. Dee, 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 into coming soon, something good. And then, yeah, and suddenly, and Brian loved the savage contrast between this optimistic riff and then this very European-sounding melody. I think what we learned from Xenomania, which if we work with them again, we could exploit more, is the contrast between the Pet Shop Boys' musicality and the Xenomania musicality. In that the Pet Shop Boys' melodies are more lugubrious. Like that, dee, 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 dee. They've got more notes, really, and they've got a bigger range, whereas Xenomania are really good at the pop riffs. Dee, 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 dee. And putting the two things together is an amazing contrast.
Lyrics now.
Yeah.
There seems to be a real element of reflection. See, for Legacy, for example, yeah, which I really like lyrically, it's almost like a list of reeling off a lot of different items, some of which are climate change, other which are high-speed rail links.
Yeah.
They all seem to be relative or of a par. It seemed like almost like a kind of conclusion of this immersion in a consumer culture, which you talk about in Beautiful People and things like that. That you're almost lost and there's no sense of priority anymore.
Well, actually, that's sort of what it's about, really. We started writing the song. This is the one we were experimenting on the melodies with. And I went on my computer, I had an entire list of different ideas for songs. And in fact, I just decided to string them together. And so it was a bit nonsensical. And then I got an idea from it. It started, "That's It, The End." And I suddenly realised that "That's It, The End" was Tony Blair's last words to the House of Commons. And I also had an idea of calling a song "Legacy," and that comes from all these politicians talking about their legacy, this very narcissistic thing they do. And so I just had this idea of politics now, or any time when a politician leaves power or gets thrown out of power, they normally leave power haunted by something. Think of big politicians, Nixon, Thatcher, Blair, Bush, Clinton, because Clinton, fortunately, it's a sex thing. They leave power and they're always haunted by something, in a way that maybe John Major isn't, for instance, because he was elected and then just left, you know. And, you know, there's Churchill. Was it Churchill who said that every political career ends in failure? It wasn't Churchill, but it was true, whoever said it. It was Enoch Powell, I think. It fascinates the idea that you're so high and then you're just at a normal level of life. There was a great bit in that film about Mrs. Thatcher on the television the other week. Well, she suddenly realises she's going to get chucked out, and she says, "What am I going to do?" And really, you could start the whole of this, you could play that bit of the film, "What am I going to do?" And then go, "That's it, the end." And so I went through the thing that you're quite right about, modern issues, the high-speed trains and all the rest of it. And then suddenly it goes back in time to, there's a cruiser waiting at Scarpa Flow, the idea of someone being taken into exile. The Pilgrimage of Grace is violent. It's like this violence in the north of England. And all, it's like all time gets mixed up. And then it's like a dream, really. And then you come back to reality with the phone rings. It's a boy from the car phone warehouse saying, "Do you want to upgrade your phone?" And it's like, that's what you've got to deal with now. And the sort of panic of having to deal with normal life and not all this high politics and foreign affairs that you've assumed as your life. Why one writes a song about that is a funny thing, because most people wouldn't. But for some reason, politics interests me like that. I find it quite inspiring. I mean, it's the third song that has had some kind of relation to Tony Blair, and there's a whole list of songs related to Russia as well and what we do.
Do you find yourself still thinking about Tony Blair, even though he'd left office now?
No, but it was just really that came about because of the, I wrote the line, "That's it, the end," and it suddenly occurred to me that that was what Tony Blair had said. I wasn't deliberately quoting it. I suddenly realised it was the quote. No, I don't think there'll be any more now, unfortunately.
His role as a muse has come to an end.
His role as a muse has definitely come to an end.
The new wave of synth pop I'd like to ask you about. You know, you played with some of these acts in your Brits medley. There was also a lot of acts from LaRue to Little Boots and various others, and perhaps starting with Hot Chip a few years ago, influencing popular music and being very successful. Do you see any lineage with acts like this? Do you listen to them?
We're very aware of Hot Chip. I think we played a few festivals with them. I'm aware of Little Boots, probably through YouTube. Quite like that keyboard she's got.
Well, the Tenorion, the kind of
that, little... that Yamaha thing. Yeah. Of course, can't copy her, so that's, she's got that really, hasn't she? That's hers. So, yeah, we're definitely aware of what's going on. And we're aware that Brandon described Human as being like Pet Shop Boys and Johnny Cash. And I can kind of hear that. Was it Johnny Cash? Yeah, I can hear that. But I don't know how much influence we are. We just felt that what we were doing now is probably more relevant than it had been at the height of Manchester and all of that.
Brit pop. And Neil, what do you find yourself listening to in terms of new music?
I listen to new pop songs. It's not that new anymore. Lady Hawk, probably just the singles rather than... Quite rare for me to listen to whole albums, actually.
You're joining the playlist generation.
I have got very playlisty. So I have playlists like new pop, new classical. Ooh. I've got a new one I really like, New Quiet.
What is the New Quiet?
New Quiet's got... do you know that Norwegian trumpeter called Arve Hendriksen?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Well, he plays with effects and kind of ambient music, and he's beautiful. I like the trumpet. I saw him quite by chance play a concert in St. Martin the Fields Church a couple of years ago, and it was really brilliant. And of course, I listened to, as I said, new classical. I like electronic ambient music, like we ended up doing that record with Sam Taylor Wood for Compact. I love the Compact label, particularly the pop ambient range they do. A lot of pop music, I just listen to their hits. I think their hits, they've got something going for them, really. Like Sex on Fire by Kings of Leon, I didn't get it first. And then suddenly I was in a shop and I thought, oh, what's this record I really like? And it was Sex on Fire. And that's, I always think that's a great way of consuming pop music, where you just hear it in shops and things, and you think, oh, I like this track. Why is it again? Because it's been in the charts about 3 years. Because I can look down the list of iTunes top pop 75 or something, think I don't really like any of these records very much. But it doesn't mean I don't listen to lots of new music. But what I think what I listen to tends to be quite obscure.
I think on that note of downbeat misery, we shall...
Absolutely.
An end to proceedings.
Well, it's getting late, isn't it?
It's getting late. I mean, it's about 3:45 or something like that. You probably need a nap.